Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. Check me out on the go, and download your favorite scary stories on my Spotify or Apple Podcast. A shout out to my channel members and my patrons. Now, let's go into the woods tonight. Five years ago, I became a park ranger. I won't include the location of this event. I don't want anyone seeking out the utter horrors I have seen in that forest. You think that you're prepared for whatever the forest might throw at you. You hear about the strange occurrences from other rangers, the missing persons cases, the unusual animals that are like nothing you have ever seen before. I was arrogant. I just blew off these stories the other more experienced rangers told me as nothing but paranoia or attempts to scare the new guy. But I was wrong. I was very wrong. I had to tell this event to someone, to warn people of the things that are out there hiding in those deep woods, just waiting for that bold individual to walk right into their clutches. This is the reason I will never return to that forest and now live in a large city. I avoid the woods that I used to love for so much because I'm terrified of what I'll find in them, or what will find me. 3 months into my time as a park ranger, it was the beginning of spring. For the past 2 weeks, I had been receiving strange reports about park visitors and a few fellow rangers. People had been seeing strange, warped-looking animals wandering about the park. The animals sighted often looked thin with patches of missing hair, had completely white eyes, were gaunt and almost skeletal, and the proportions of the animals were said to just seem wrong. As if the animals were just not completely convincing copies of the animals they were supposed to be. Of course, most of us just assumed there was some sort of disease starting to affect the animals in the park. There was an old park ranger who had started at the park a month before the sightings started, named Briggs, who warned us that he had seen this before. He was worried and insisting we should close up the park. He said that the animals were dangerous and a safety hazard to anyone inside the forest, but he wouldn't say any more than that. He just always looked haunted when we would talk about those animals and said that the forest wasn't safe anymore. Of course, we just wrote him off as being a kooky, paranoid old guy who had probably had some kind of traumatic wild animal attack experience. We didn't even entertain the possibility that he might be right, and our hubris would be our downfall. I still remember something Briggs said to me one day shortly before he quit working for the park. It was always so weird to me that Briggs was so disturbed by these animal reports and looked so haunted when he talked about them. He was a big man in his late 70s, but he could have easily wiped the floor with any youngster who tried to step foot to him. He was an ex-Navy SEAL and a tough and real smart son of a gun. I was surprised he was so superstitious and paranoid that we should close up the park when it just seemed like some outbreak of a disease amongst some of the wildlife. All in all, it didn't seem like a big deal at the time. Briggs didn't say specifically why he was so insistent on closing up the park. All he would say to me on the subject was, "There's things in that forest you can't comprehend, boy. Things that will break a grown man in two like a twig. They're smart, you know. We think we're the apex predator in this world, but we couldn't be more wrong. If you aren't afraid, you're a fool. They're coming out in droves and I don't know why, but I don't plan on being here to find out. I've seen the horrors of war, Sonny, and what I saw on the battlefield is nothing compared to what I've seen in that forest. Do the wise thing and listen to this old timer before it's too late." I just wrote off what Briggs told me, but now I wish I hadn't. If I could, I would go back and change what I've done, but it's too late now. And the horrors I saw will stick with me as long as I live. 1 week after Briggs warned us to close down the park, he quit and left the park behind. He was the smart one. He knew what was coming and didn't want to be around when all hell broke loose. I saw a glimpse of one of those strange animals on one of my patrols within that week, but it just looked like a sick raccoon to me. I thought nothing of it, and it was gone before I could attempt to catch it. But within 5 weeks of these sightings beginning, things had started to become stranger. We have had 10 reports from park visitors of being attacked by these sickly-looking animals. All of them had told us the same thing. The animals seemed intelligent now, like they were hunting them. They seemed intelligent, and they seemed angry. We were bewildered and unsure of what to make of the situation. We have been trying to hunt down and put down the sick animals since the report started. We decided it was wiser to put down these animals to keep the sickness from spreading, but the animals remained inclusive. The most any of us were able to do was catch occasional glimpses of them. But that all changed one night in the sixth week of the sightings. We'd also had 10 missing persons cases brought to our door within the past 2 weeks. Though we were unsure if this was attached to the sick animal sightings and were unable to find any traces of the missing people aside from some abandoned belongings and campsites. On a seemingly peaceful summer night, 3 of us were at the ranger station on an overnight shift. It was myself, Hank, a tough hulking man in his early 30s, and Lita, a petite girl in her late teens, who was interning at the park over the summer. We had increased employee presence in the park due to the strange animal behavior of the past 2 or so months. It was close to 10 at night when we had a historical young blonde woman rushing into our station. She was covered in dirt and scratches, her clothes in tatters. She looked wild, like someone who had been lost in the forest for weeks. She was sobbing, babbling, and collapsed into the arms of Hank. I started to check for her and treat her injuries as we tried to calm the woman down enough for her to speak clearly. After about an hour, we managed to calm her down enough for her to be able to speak in somewhat coherent sentences. She was still hard to understand, but we managed to get the gist of what she had to say. The woman told us that she had been camping in the park with her 4 friends. They had set up camp in the morning, and everything seemed normal. But after the sun set, things started to become strange. They started to hear odd noises coming from the forest, and swore that they even heard talking, though the voices sounded garbled and growled, almost like someone who still wasn't completely sure how to form words. They started to feel on edge and had decided to leave first thing in the morning, but were too scared to venture out into the forest in the middle of the night with the strange noises they were hearing. She told us, after an hour of hearing the strange noises coming from the forest, a stumbling and almost hairless, sickly, gaunt coyote with pure white eyes came out of the forest and started venturing into the clearing where they had set up camp. The coyote was making strange noises like it was in pain. And the closer it got, the easier it was for them to see the coyote seemed off. She said that the coyote seemed just a little too long and too tall to be a coyote, like it had been stretched or something. As the coyote got closer, her friend Trace got scared and decided to throw a rock at the coyote to scare it off. Instead of throwing the rock near the coyote, he threw a fist-sized rock at the coyote and hit it square in the head. The rock hit the coyote and it collapsed to the ground. After the rock hit the coyote, the forest seemed to go completely still, almost like time had stopped. The only sounds the 5 of them could hear were their own terrified breathing and the crackling of the campfire. They thought Trace had killed the coyote. In their ear silence, they could see it wasn't breathing. But then, the coyote's body jerked. Strange cracking noises can be heard from the coyote's body as it twitched and contorted. Its body changed into an almost humanoid shape as it rose up on two legs. The coyote bared its teeth at the five of them in a sneer and then opened its mouth. They heard the coyote speak two chilling words in a deep, guttural voice.
Feeding time.
These two words seemed to send the forest into chaos as creatures of varying shapes and sizes swarmed from the tree line upon the five campers. Not all of the animals even seemed to look like animals or anything the girl had ever seen before. The creatures dragged the five of them through the forest to a cave, dragging them inside to what seemed to be a dark and massive cave system. This is something I found strange, considering that the only caves we had in this park were relatively small. There should have been nothing in that park like what this girl was describing. She told us that the animals dragged them into this cave system and trapped them in some kind of sticky, wispy substance that seemed to be like spiderwebs, but with the strength of thick rope. She said that she could barely remember what happened after that, since she couldn't see in the pitch-black cave. All she could hear was the occasional screams of terror and pain from her friends, and the squelching noises of what she knew were her friends being eaten. She wasn't sure how long she was in there. What she guessed was that every few days, one of them would be taken and fed upon by what she could only guess was the creatures that took them into the caves. The creatures also would force-feed her water and food every so often. Though it was clear, they only fed her enough to keep her alive. She said she was fed some kind of mush she had never been able to identify, only that it tasted utterly foul and almost like something rotten. When it was finally her turn to be eaten, she got lucky. She felt the threads that bound her being cut by what seemed to be some large claw or knife, and then she crashed to the cave floor. In a panic, she managed to grab a large rock. She struck out of the darkness towards where she believed to be the thing that had cut her loose. She could tell that she made contact with something and heard a growl of pain as the creature hit the ground. She didn't wait to figure out how much damage she had done. She had just ran. She ran for what felt like hours. She could hear the sounds of growls and what seemed to be the garbled speech she couldn't understand all around her. But somehow, she managed to avoid the creatures who were hunting for her. She managed to escape the cave system and just ran blindly through the forest in the dark until she found the ranger's station. After finishing the story, she just bursted into sobs and begged us to protect her from the monsters that she thought were still chasing her. We realized after hearing her story that she was part of a group of five campers who had gone missing in the forest 2 weeks earlier. It was a group of college students who had come to the park on summer break, but after the first day of their camping trip, their families and friends had stopped hearing from them. After 3 days of no contact from the students, we had been notified that these campers were to be considered officially missing. We had been contacted by the families even earlier than that, and had run some preliminary searches, but like the five other missing persons that had cropped up in the past 2 weeks, we had only found an abandoned campsite and belongings from the campers. After closer inspection of the girl and asking for her name, we managed to identify her as one of the two missing girls, Abigail. At the time, we believed that Abigail and her friends were likely drugged and attacked by some dangerous individuals in the forest. It was easier to think that Abigail had just crafted this unbelievable narrative as a way to comprehend what had happened to her, while kept heavily drugged and docile. After all, what sane and responsible person could honestly believe the wild tale Abigail had spun? We left Abigail to eat and discussed amongst the three of us for a bit about what to do with her. We were quick to decide that the best course of action was to notify law enforcement that we had found Abigail, and that there were likely a group of dangerous individuals currently residing in the park. The three of us felt very disconcerted after hearing Abigail's story, but knew that we couldn't very well abandon our post in the early hours of our shift. At this point, we all just wanted to get Abigail somewhere safe and really wanted to leave the park, even though we couldn't. First, I tried to call the police through the office phone, but the line was dead. That far out, in the middle of nowhere, phone service can be notoriously unreliable, so our mobiles couldn't be used to call the police either. The office phones were really our best way of contact to the outside world, unless we felt like wandering about until we managed to possibly get a bar of service. With the phone lines down, we just decided to shut down for the night and take Abigail to the police station ourselves. As we were gathering our things and shutting off the lights for the night, we all moved with a mutual sense of urgency. Human instinct is a powerful thing, and at that moment, all of us seemed to sense that something was wrong. Suddenly, Abigail started screaming loud enough that I was sure she could actually crack the windows. She started pointing towards the window straight across from the couch she sat on and screaming, "It's here! They're here! You have to help me! They're coming for me!" Initially, I thought that the girl was just hysterical. That was until I saw it. The thing was exactly what Abigail had described. It was a too tall bipedal thing with gangly but muscular limbs and a patchy furred body. It had to be at least 8 feet tall, with the way its torso was the only part initially visible when I looked out the window. When it crouched down and tapped its claw against the glass, it had the head of a coyote with those milky white eyes. It grinned and let out a growl.
"Come out!"
It purred in a gravely sing-song voice. Abigail screamed and backpedaled away from the window, hiding behind and latching on to Hank while yelling that we needed to escape and begging us not to let him take her. I was frozen in fear. I was in no way equipped to handle this. I was just an average guy from Iowa with no special skills to speak of, besides being decently athletic with an encyclopedic knowledge of the outdoors. The only thing I could do at that moment was stand frozen and staring in horror at the thing peering at us through the window and chuckling at our terrified faces. Surprisingly, what snapped me out of my shell-shocked state was Lita. She was the only one out of us who didn't look scared. Instead, she looked angry. She smacked me across the face hard enough to leave my ears ringing. She then proceeded to do the same with Hank. Hank and I shared mirrored surprise expressions that Lita was so quick to action, and that her small form could hit that hard.
"Get your shit together. We all need to get the hell out of here," Lita yelled at the three of us.
She then proceeded to remove a black pistol from her backpack. A multitude of questions were rushing through my mind. At the top of that list was wanting to know what the hell that thing outside was, and right below that was bewilderment at Lita's 180 shift from a bobbly, perky teenager to acting like some battle-hardened veteran. I didn't have much time to spend on these musings, however, as we heard the window crack. The coyote thing had placed a hard punch to the window that had caused it to fracture. One more good hit would surely shatter it. Then Lita raised her gun and fired. The bullet shattered the window and sent the coyote crashing back to the ground.
"Hurry! Get to Hank's truck! And get your frickin' guns!"
Lita yelled. Hank and I already had our shotguns out and ready due to the reports of animal attacks. so we were able to snatch them up quickly as Lita took the lead to head to the front door. Abigail continued to stick close to Hank silently with wide, terrified eyes as we moved cautiously for the door. Lita threw open the door, and I was shocked at what we were faced with. There were at least 30 of those warped animals we had heard so much about. And at the head of them was that coyote, with a now missing left arm and the shoulder stump looking like it healed years ago. The coyote was the only one in a bipedal form. The other animals looked warped in various shapes and sizes, some being recognizable animals and others simply looked like horrifying beasts I had never seen before. The only thing that they had in common was those white eyes. The coyote snarled and seemed to focus its attention on Lita.
"You'll pay for that,"
it growled out. Lita sneered at the coyote in response.
"Shove it, you overgrown flea bag,"
she shot back as she reached into her backpack and produced a flare which she was quick to light and hold out in front of her. The creatures recoiled at the light and the coyote let out a deep, unearthly growl. She hurled the flare into the crowd of animals and then scattered with unnatural speed back from the flare.
"Go!"
Lita yelled, and the four of us made a break for it to the parking lot while we had the opening. Lita took the lead, taking a shot at any of the creatures who tried to leap at us as we ran. Her bullets seemed to have strange effects on the creatures. The moment they hit, black liquid bubbled from their injuries and the things would screech in pain, as their bodies seemed to start to dissolve into a black liquid. Hank and I took a few shots at the things, but our bullets didn't seem to do much other than knock the creatures back briefly. When we did get to the truck, we all piled in quickly, and Hank was in the driver's seat, and he gunned it towards the exit to the park right after the engine roared to life. I let out a breath of relief as I thought we were home free.
"Don't start relaxing. We're not out of the woods yet,"
Lita scolded me, and then offered a hint of a smirk at a terrible joke she'd made. I looked at her in disbelief for a moment before an uneasy chuckle escaped from Hank and me, appreciating an attempt to calming the three of us at least. Lita's smirk quickly faded as she focused her attention on the blurry view of the forest outside the car as Hank sped along the road.
"So, what the hell are you?"
Hank asked as he kept his eyes focused on the road. But it was clear the question was meant for Lita. It was an unspoken question that had been hanging in the air ever since Lita jumped into action to deal with the coyote thing back at the ranger station.
"I'll tell you what, Hank. I'll give you a nice lengthy explanation after we're out of the forest full of those things itching to get us. Sound good?"
she responded faintly. Hank gave a sign in response.
"Fine, fine. Fair enough. Do we at least know what those things are?"
he pressed.
"Yes,"
Lita said shortly. Then she sighed heavily. "All you need to know is that they're really hard to kill, and if you want to bring them down, you gotta aim for their vitals. They won't stop moving until their bodies are completely destroyed. Their eyes are sensitive to light, and they'll naturally flee from it. Fire also does a nice job of doing heavy damage to them. You manage to engulf one in flames, and they'll go up like a bonfire dosed in gasoline. But get back quick before they explode, unless you want to go smelling like roadkill that won't wear off for weeks. The exception to the flame rule is that coyote thing. Fire will hurt it, but it's not enough to kill it. If something messes up, you leave me to deal with the coyote thing while you focus on escaping. If the coyote thing gets taken out, and the small animals will stop attacking. They'll still be those things, but they won't be coordinated anymore. So it'll give you the opening you need to get out," she explained. I stared at Lita with wide eyes, wondering how exactly it was she knew all this. I could tell Hank was wondering the same thing, but it was clear that this was all Lita was willing to tell us at the moment. Abigail remained quiet in the back seat with me. She was just staring out the window with wide, vacant eyes. Not that I could blame her after what she had been through. I guess she just needed some time to process everything. Before I could speak up and ask Abigail anything, I heard a loud metallic crunch and then we were airborne. I caught a flash of brown fur before the truck tumbled off the road, rolling down a steep hill and came to a rest on its roof, having been stopped by a large pine tree. I sat suspended in the air by my seatbelt with my ears ringing and my body trying to process the shock of the crash. I was snapped out of my dazed state by Lita cursing loudly.
"Shoot! The truck is screwed!"
she huffed out as she unclicked her seatbelt and crashed onto the roof of the car.
"Is everybody okay?"
she asked as she shifted to look at the rest of us. Lita had a deep cut on her right cheek and forearm with some various cuts and bruises scattered across her form as well, but she seemed mostly unharmed.
"I'm okay, I think,"
I choked out before undoing my seatbelt as well and hitting the roof of the car with a faint grunt. Aside from some cuts and being sore as hell, I was fine as far as I could tell. Hank was similarly mostly unharmed, aside from a thick bit of glass that had gotten stuck in his left bicep, but that was able to be quickly tended to by Lita by taking the glass out and tearing off a bit of his sleeve to tie around the wound. Abigail appeared to have passed out from the crash. She had a few deep gashes on her forearms and some smaller scratches, but otherwise, she seemed unharmed. However, she was unconscious, and it was difficult to assess how she really was until she woke up. Something odd I noticed about her that I wish I had paid more attention to was that her blood looked almost black. But I just assumed I was seeing things because of the poor lighting and already being very on edge. Hank and I gently removed Abigail from the wreckage of the truck, while Lita surveyed the damage and tried to figure out exactly where we were. The truck was an absolute wreck. The passenger side had collapsed inward like something heavy had impacted with it, and the resulting roll down the hill and crashing into the pine tree had completely totaled the truck. We were lucky the truck was as sturdy as it was, or we would have surely walked away with worse injuries than we had.
"We'll have to continue on foot from here," Lita said before placing a hand over Abigail's mouth and giving her a smack across her cheek to see if it would wake her up.
Abigail woke with a start, but her resulting scream was muffled by Lita's hand over her mouth. Once Abigail took in her surroundings, Lita tore the sleeves off her shirt and used them as a cloth to treat Abigail's wounds on her forearms.
"Come on, we need to get moving before they catch up with us," she barked.
The three of us followed behind Lita, with Abigail in between the three of us, considering her unarmed and mostly unresponsive state. We all moved at a brisk walking pace, sticking to the shadows of the tree line but never completely leaving the view of the road, just in case a car happened to come by. For a while, we were able to continue on without interruption. The forest was almost completely quiet. Not even a sound from the insect could be heard. The only sounds we could hear was the occasional howl or growl in the distance, and the sounds of our footsteps and heavy breaths. Despite the terrors of the night, this was perhaps one of the most terrifying parts to me, that utter quiet, and the sense that at any moment one of those things could rush from the forest to do God knows what. Then the silence was broken, as a thing that resembled a large deformed porcupine the size of a wolf rushed at us from the underbrush. Lita fired off a bullet into the creature's chest before it could make contact, and it screeched and quickly started to dissolve on the ground. Then the sounds of more growls and rushing footsteps can be heard as reinforcements rush towards the area, attracted by the gunshot and the screeches of pain from the porcupine-like creature.
"Run!"
Lita yelled before breaking off into a sprint. The three of us quickly followed, with Abigail pulling ahead of Hank and myself despite her frail condition. She had enough sense to at least not run out ahead of Lita, but her swift movements were startling. At the time, I chalked it up to adrenaline. We ran with the sounds of those creatures pursuing us, filling the forest area around us. Lita, Hank, and I fired off the occasional shot when one of those things tried to jump at us from the forest, but we managed to keep ahead of the creatures. Or at least, that's what we thought anyways. As we emerged out into a large clearing, the moonlight illuminated the coyote, who seemed to be even larger than the last time we had seen it. Though its left arm was still missing, behind it stood a large half-circle of those creatures of numbers of at least 50 who all stood waiting, hissing and snarling as if they desired nothing more than to charge and tear us apart. Lita didn't hesitate to raise her gun and took a shot at the coyote. But when she did, all that sounded was an empty click. She was out of bullets.
"Crap,"
she said softly under her breath, quickly reaching to the side pocket of her backpack as if reaching for more ammo. Before she could reach the side pocket, a squirrel-like thing the size of a large dog came crashing down from the tree above and smacking into her back. Lita cursed as she struggled against the creature, but it held firm. Hank raised his shotgun to try to shoot the squirrel creature off of Lita, but as he made that move, he was knocked to the ground by the small, frail form of Abigail. She had landed a hard elbow to the ribs that caused a loud crunch. Hank groaned in pain as he instinctively curled into himself, and Abigail took the opportunity to pin him to the ground on his stomach with a too-wide grin settling on her features that showed sharp teeth. Her eyes were white now, like the other frickin' things. As she held him, her body started twisting and crunching as her limbs grew longer and distorted, with her skin taking on a papery white shade with a gray tinge. She bit into the side of Hank's neck, and he let out a pained gargling sound as she took a chunk out of the side of his neck.
"Damn it, Hank!"
Lita yelled as she struggled still against her captor. Then she looked at me with an instinct gaze.
"Get out of here!"
she roared with the ting of desperation in her voice. In that moment, my survival instincts took over and I listened. It was as if my body went in autopilot while my mind raced. I thought that I couldn't just leave Lita and Hank behind. I had to stay and try to save them. But even as I thought this, I kept running like my body had a will of its own, separate from my mind. I tore through the forest, everything fading into a blur as I focused on what was ahead of me. I don't know how long I ran for, but eventually, I felt something heavy crash into me. I hit the ground roughly and felt the wind being knocked out of me. I briefly saw the shadowed outline of a hulking figure before I fell unconscious from the hard impact.